Change starts and stops with a WTF moment. The first is, what the fuck am I doing? We finally wake up to the reality that our life is not what we want it to be. The denial is done. We have to ask ourselves the hard questions. If we never have that moment, nothing changes. The next WTF is walking towards fear. If you aren't willing to find your growth edges and take steps in a new and likely scary direction, again, nothing changes. This podcast is a space to explore open and honest conversations around creating change in our personal worlds, which honestly has become my favorite adventure yet. Thanks for following along. Yet another episode of the Walking Towards Fear podcast. And today's guest is my friend Lane Knighting, who is a ridiculous adventurer, who is committed to creativity, and is absolutely amazing, both as a person, a partner, a father, and a friend. So welcome, Lane.
Hey, thanks. Except that there are no ridiculous adventurers. Anybody who's adventurous, they understand something that the rest of the people don't, right?
Absolutely. So, wonderful question to start off with. What makes an adventure?
Ooh, you know, there's a quote that I heard a long time ago, and I love it. It said, adventure without risk is Disneyland.
Ooh.
It's got to have risk. And there's five things that we've identified that really need to be in a transformative adventure. And I'd be really curious to see if they size up for you and yours. Okay. You ready? And you'll love the acronym. Okay. The acronym is GUIDE. G-U-I-D-E. G stands for generative. It generates something that you didn't have before. U is unpredictable. You can't game it all. You can't figure it all out. There's got to be some element of unpredictability about it. I is immersive. You can't dip your toes in the water. You can't fling in for a couple of hours and then bounce out. It's got to be immersive where you're in it deep. D is daring. So daring does involve risk. It's got to involve something that's going to stretch you and challenge you to discard some of the beliefs you've carried around with you in your backpack forever. And then E is enticing. It's got to be something that you find exhilarating, something that pulls you rather than is imposed from somebody else.
Okay, I love that, first off. And that enticing piece, right? We've talked about this before. People who are listening, they know my story. I hiked the PCT. That was my adventure, right? Mm-hmm. And with that enticing piece, having it be different, and you were talking about risk. This is the Walking Towards Fear podcast. We talk all about risk and mm-hmm. fear, all those things. What in your life have been some of your grandest adventures? Because what entices you might be different to somebody else. But what about you personally?
Sure. There are two specific adventures that totally blew the socks off. One, as you know, was cycling coast to coast across the U.S. And it wasn't the thin version. It wasn't going between San Diego and Florida, which is still epic. But it was going from the western edge of Washington all the way to the eastern tip of Maine. And that blew me away. And it brought forth a principle that I think you and I would both agree on, and that our people who are listening would absolutely, I think they would love. They'd probably get scared by it. But you commit first, and then you figure out how to do it.
Say that again.
Commit first, then figure out how to do it.
So what did that look like for you on your cycling adventure?
Christina, you know, this is back in the days of dial-up. I would get online and just voraciously explore every scrap of information I could find about people who had cycled across America. Like, what did you experience? What was it like? What were the photos? Who were the people? And I got so intrigued by them, especially there was one thing about it that totally blew me away. And that is that many of them, when they got back, they either gutted their garage, they either sold their home, or they quit their jobs and did something else. But they simplified on a level that was so foreign to at least the way I was thinking back then. We're in a culture that says more, more, more. You got to have more, accumulate more. And they were saying, nope, you do the opposite. And so I deeply, deep inside, Christina, I wanted to know, what did you experience that flipped your mind so, so completely? So I guess more in answer to your question, about a year and a quarter before I actually went, I wrote this long blog post. It was nearly midnight on a Saturday in March, and I was terrified because I thought, if I hit post, that means I'm announcing to the whole world that I'm doing this. And if I back out, I'm going to be a schmuck to myself, to everybody around. And so I hit post and then later on figured out how to do it.
And I know some of this backstory, right? Nobody else who's listening does, but it's not like you were doing your own thing, living by yourself, had no other responsibilities, and just decided to cycle across the country, right? That was not the case. There was a lot of figuring out the how that did happen. So what were some of the things that you had to logistically figure out when you hit post and decided that you wanted to commit to this adventure?
Yeah, great question. And for those people listening, part of the backstory that you allude to is I was in a safe, secure, comfortable spot as a professor at the university and basically felt trapped. So I had a mortgage, I had student debt, I had a family, I had a wife and seven kids.
How many? Wait.
Seven.
Okay, just checking. Seven.
I know. Yeah, you know, and I got to give you a little caveat. You know, I used to tell people afterwards, yeah, I cycled 4,300 miles and my wife and seven kids have joined me. And they're like, what? You have seven kids? And I would get so crushed. I'm like, no, that was not the thing that you're supposed to pay attention to. Did you not hear the 4,300 miles? Like, that's epic. Yeah, but seven kids. So anyway, that was it. That was it. Plus, part of the story is that I had nursed this dream for about a decade. And some of my dearest friends said, I can't believe you, Lane. You're not a man in my book. Like, you're just going to go on this pleasure jaunt across the U.S. and abandon your family. Yeah, you're not a man. And I listened to that. So later, when I was faced with this do or die prospect of doing it or forever saying goodbye to it, it was figuring out, how do I take my family with me so that it becomes a family experience? Because I got a two-year-old. I got kids ranging all the way up to teenager. They don't want a bike. So how do we mix their desires with mine and make it happen?
Well, I think that just speaks to the creator that you are, right? And have been, to say, here's this dream that I have. Just because I do have responsibilities and I do have a family doesn't mean that gets on the back burner. It's, how do I enroll them and create the experience that I want with them with me? So what was your solution?
So the solution was amazing. I went to a friend of mine and said, I have no idea how I'm going to do this, Warren. No idea, but I've got to do it by the time I'm 40, or I've got to let it go. And there's a different story to that, but he said, well, Lane, take your family with you. Ha! Yeah, they don't want to go with me. You know, all I could imagine was them getting on bikes and going. And like, I talked to them. They did not want to do that. He says, well, Just get a motorhome. Ha! Maybe you have $100,000 in your bank account. I don't. I don't have that kind of cash lying around. And that's when he smiled, kind of this Lane, I know something you don't, and I'm going to give you a secret that is going to knock your socks off. He said, we live in Mesa, Arizona. It is a mecca for motorhomes, and I can go down to the auction tomorrow. I can pick up one for $4,000, put $2,000 into it to fix it up. There's your home for the summer. I was freaking blown away. Like, I'd imagined that motorhomes were $100,000 and there was no way I would ever get one. And I'll just pause right here, because as we walk toward fear, the fear is bigger than we think it is. Like, as soon as you walk toward it, I'm sure that you've mentioned this many times, but as soon as you walk toward it, you realize that what seems like this massive Mount Everest mountain is just this little molehill. So I went back to my family, pitched it. They bought it. We bought a motorhome. We actually ended up selling it for more than we paid for it.
Wow.
And we had an incredible summer.
And you got to live a dream.
Oh, and not just live a dream, but begin to live an epic dream. Like, as big as I imagined it to be, reality blew it out of the water and then helped open my mind and heart to realize what is possible out there.
And that's what I love, right? Because you had even said, I was talking to this friend and I knew I had to do this by 40. I either had to do it or I had to let it go. So yeah. Why did you choose, or what helped you choose to do it instead of letting it go?
I had a vision. This vision opened up to me of and not one of these nighttime while you're laying on your bed, on your pillow dreams at night, but like a Moses type of experience, or Muhammad, where it's like God spoke to you. And in this vision, I was standing in a world of gray, staring at this vibrant world of color. And between us stretched a giant iron fence with a gate that was slowly creaking shut. And I knew, in a way that shook me right to my toes, that if I didn't squeak through before it shut, I would never get through. And I would be eternally stuck in the world of gray. That, paired with my dad, and there's a longer story to it, but he told me that when he was 40, he gave up on his dreams. He said, when you turn 40, that's when you let them go. And that crushed me. So ever since that conversation, there was a seed in my mind that if I didn't do it by the time I was 40, I would never do it. So those two things combined compelled me to act in a way I'd never acted before, to be somebody I'd never been before, and to face fears that I had never faced before and actually make it happen.
That's powerful. And what you're kind of talking about is a phenomenon that someone recently put language for me, like mm-hmm. the walking dead, right? These people are walking around, but they are dead inside.
Yes. Right?
So to see you had that, you know, that vision of, oh my gosh, if I don't do this now, I mean, even the language used before, right? You were a professor at the university and you still felt trapped. To say that gate's not closing on me, I'm making this happen. So that first kind of bold choice, how comfortable were you with making difficult choices like that from like the past version of Lane that existed?
You know, that radically changed. In fact, here's the way I describe it. Christina, it was like, it didn't just change the world. It changed the axis on which the world spun for me. So after that, 3 years later, I quit the university. And then with my family's stamp of approval, I went cycling for 2 months alone through Southern Europe, going from Lisbon, Portugal, over to Rome, Italy. And And it's set, actually, there's a little more backstory to that. I was pleading with the heavens, what's next? What's next? And I was led through a process where at the end of it, I stared at what I'd written on a little 3x5 card. And it said, cycle every country in the world and figure out how to make your living through that. Whoa! I mean, you talk about the clash between exhilaration and terrifying. I thought, how in the world am I going to do that? You got places like Russia and North Korea and war-torn places in Africa, and then islands out there in the middle of the ocean where it costs outrageous prices to get to. Like, how do you do that? And the answer was figure it out.
Yeah, but, commit first, then figure out the how.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that as mind-blowing as the coast-to-coast was, Christina, the Southern Europe trek, that's where I really came face-to-face with fear. Because you're alone. You're alone. You're in countries that speak languages you don't speak. The signs are in languages you don't speak. You're not used to all the comforts that you take for granted. Mm-hmm. You know, coast-to-coast, you're still in America. You're still around a government and a society and cultures that they may be different from state to state and location to location, but by and large, they're pretty solid and familiar.
So
and going over there was dramatically different.
So going over there, well, from cycling across the country first, right, with your family, mm-hmm. following you in this motorhome, to going over there, doing your own thing and doing it independently, like, what was the big fear? What was the, like, worst case scenario that your mind would play out?
The worst case was that somebody would attack me, take all my gear, and I'd be stuck.
So how often did you find your mind, like, spinning on kind of worst case scenario fears versus just kind of what you were saying before as the perceived Mount Everests, right? That as you kind of actually picked it up and looked at it closer and inspected it, you're like, actually, this fear I can put down a little bit more easily.
So what's interesting, Christina, is that in the beginning, I don't think I had a lot of fears. I just had excitement about the journey. I'd imagined being one of those troubadours or storytellers of old that sleeps in the roadside heather and finds a not a cabin, but a barn or, you know, of some old farmer that says, yeah, you can stay there. And I had two experiences that shifted that for me. One, I found that during the day, it was magic, absolutely magic. I was living a dream. But then in the evening, that's when the shadows start to come and all the fears that have been haunting you since childhood start to play out. And I thought, I got to find a place, and I don't want thieves coming in. I don't want to encroach on some farmer's farm and have him come and scold me. I just wanted to be quietly tucked away out of sight. And two things happened. One, it was in Spain one night. A guy, let's see, how can I tell you the quick version? A woman had told me there's no camping in the town, but if you go back, there's like this, not really a forested area, but a riparian area. You can camp there. Nobody will bug you. So I went down there, started to pitch my tent. When a guy came walking by, trudged right toward me. I thought he would ignore me. Instead, he came right up to me, and he was a bigger guy. And he came so close that as he gesticulated, his hands slapped against me and two or three times actually batted my crotch. Now, I didn't realize what fears I had until then. And I thought, I don't want to be, you know, sexually molested by somebody. He's a big guy. You know, he could easily take me down. And so he finally left. He got in a car. He started it up, turned it off. Started it up. Went around, drove around the parking lot, the gravel parking lot there, turned it off. A few minutes later, started it up again, backed up, turned it off. I was freaking out. I'm like, what in the world is this guy doing? I am petrified. I don't even have a weapon. What can I do if this nut job decides to come after me? Well, he didn't. I had a very sleepless night. But here's the pattern that I found. And I'd be really curious to see if you found anything like this. And it was almost like the universe was stretching me in a new direction, a new dimension, almost to the breaking point, like a rubber band ready to snap, and then let up and said, okay, you survived the test. Now I'm going to bathe you in a miracle. And the next day, I ended up in Seville, Spain. And out of all of the edifices I've seen, the Colosseum, the Taj Mahal, cathedrals, castles, all of that, the one that has impacted me more than any other, I saw that day. And it has lingered with me ever since in the past 11 years. Second experience, I was in the southern tip of Spain and looking for a place to camp. And there was no campground, none. And so I found a deserted, abandoned old, like a plot of ground near the bay. And it was filled with all kinds of refuse and used toilet paper and a homeless guy that was walking up toward me. And I freaked out. I left, found another plot of grass, slept there. A drunk popped the curb in the middle of the night, nearly ran into me. I got up and I just roamed until church started the next day. I went to church and again, okay, so I was like that rubber band stretched in a new dimension. I passed, eased up, and there a guy said, hey, why don't you come stay with me? I got food. I got a place to sleep. You'll be safe. You'll get some rest. Come with me. And I found that sort of pattern happened all the way through that journey. Did you ever experience anything like that?
It's an interesting pattern in the sense that I didn't have a lot of moments of what I'll call like acute bouts of fear while I was on the trail. I had a handful. And as you're sharing that, my mind is saying, yeah, to some extent, for sure. I mean, with every event that happens, right, there's a good part of that event and there's a bad part of that event. Mm-hmm. And to see kind of this duality play out, for instance, I was nearly mauled by a dog on the trail. It was probably the scariest moment for me and one that I'm actually still working through. Like just now in my life, out hiking, out walking, I see a dog or I hear a dog barking and my physiology responds. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of scary and not something that's not really who I am. I love dogs. And after this experience where the only reason that I was safe and that I didn't actually get mauled is on the side of the road where I was walking. Again, I saw this dog coming at me. It was at a full sprint and it would have attacked me fully. Wow. And I fell into a ravine on the side of the road. And that ravine happened to be filled with, of course, it couldn't have been like a nice fluffy anything. It was covered in pricker bushes. So I fell through just thorns and thorns and thorns. And after that experience and walking into this town, I was really shaken up, as you can imagine. And I experienced so much kindness from this woman at this small store who, you know, there's the employee-only bathroom that they don't really allow hikers to use. She gave me bars of soap. She gave me a towel. She said, please go use our rest area, clean yourself up, and just really was supportive of you know, the spot that I found myself in. So on one hand, I'm seeing the, what I'll call kind of the horrors of dog ownership, because the people that engage with this dog after, you could tell it was not a happy dog. And then to have this kindness so strongly spotlighted after that experience, it's just like, it restores your faith in people, right? Yeah. And that's what the pattern I saw, and that's kind of what it sounds like you're alluding to, is there are these events that are, we wouldn't necessarily choose on our own. We wouldn't sign up for them. And yet the outcomes of those things are still really powerful when we kind of let them in, allow them to guide us to see that, right?
Yes. Yes, beautifully said.
So with your experiences, it sounds like Spain for you, of all the different places, was the one where you had your two kind of events that helped shift that perspective for you. And knowing that, I'm sure watching your mind through that process, it says a lot of things, right? So if you had to like take away a learning from that particular leg of your journey, that independent trip through Europe, what do you think that learning was?
Well, I think it's exactly what I stated before, that it's like the universe will stretch you to the breaking, near the breaking point, just to test you, and then grant you something miraculous and beautiful to reward you for it. And I found that again and again and again, help in Italy, through France, in Andorra, just all the way through, there were extraordinary kindnesses, but they were usually preceded by some sort of a grueling test, something that forced me to face a fear I didn't realize I still clung to.
So after kind of seeing that pattern play out and feeling like there was that combination of serious testing leading to miracles, after that experience, right, of riding across the country and then taking the solo expedition on your own, what else have you created from all that learning?
You know, for the longest time, I naively believed I was finally catching up to what everybody else knew. And what I found is that it was the opposite, that so many people are the walking dead, that they're zombies or robots. And not that they intend to.
Of course.
I don't think anyone does, but the programming is so deeply instilled in them that they feel trapped and they feel like they need to, they should be content with what they have. And there's something to that. There's something to enjoying and being grateful for what you have. But there's also that dream that pounds inside of us and is crying out for release. So what I started doing after that, to answer your question, Christina, was I created a dream program. I ended up being a dream manager for a tech company where I helped their employees identify and then move toward their dreams. And it was powerful. It's powerful to watch people who said, man, I didn't think I'd get anything out of this. And they end up crying because they're finally tapped into something they've denied. The other thing is, I now take people on these epic adventures that are part of a 6-month program. And we go to far flung places of the world. And we do it in a way that connects us not only with the landscape, but with the people, with the hidden nooks that are covering lands, landscapes, countries. So we go by bike. We haul our own gear. We don't have a support vehicle. And if we have problems, we solve them in real time with whatever resources we have at hand.
Oh, I love that. And, you know, as you were saying, the thing that stood out to me was there are so many people, right? They thought it would just be so convenient if they could just be content with what they have, right? They want that. People want to feel happy. They want to feel contented and to see that there's this duality of, and I'm not. Like, there's something else that I'm looking for. There's something else that I'm wanting. And I experienced that and I acted on it, right? Not through the disillusionment that fear doesn't exist, but despite the fear. And that's what you've shared too, right? That there's this, there's something that they've denied themselves. And then for you to open up and say, hey, there's a way to access that. And you'd mentioned, right, that you wanted to create a life around cycling every country in the world. So how has that evolved for you? How many countries have you cycled in?
49 so far. There are, according to the UN definition, 197. So I'm about, what, a fourth of the way there. And what is even more exciting about it all, Christina, is realizing that, you know, at one time, all I wanted to do was see these buildings that you only see in movies and pictures and storybooks. And I got to a point where I thought, it's another cathedral. It's another castle, big deal. Like, that's not enticing for me. And it's gone deeper on two levels to say, how do I better help my clients get the kind of extraordinary experience compacted that it took me years to experience? So that has helped me work through, how do I shape this micro experience of 7 days and give it 3 years worth of impact? And the other thing is, instead of looking for sites and castles and even beautiful landscapes, I've discovered it really is at the heart, it's about connecting with people, not just the people who come on the journey, but the people who live in the countries where we go, and to realize that there's a thread of humanity that connects every single one of us. And everyone has stories about those guys. We're good over here. You got to watch out for those guys over there. They're the ones. And so you go over there and you find that they've got the same story. Hey, we're the guys who are safe. You got to watch out for those guys over there. And that ultimately, if you are open, and I think that's a critical requirement. If you are open to receive and open to give, then you find that humanity gives back to you tenfold.
So that's the thing, right? And I saw this a lot on the trail this year as well. And I just see it all over, that we have this group we label as other, right? That's outside of us. We're unfamiliar with it. And therefore we're fearful of it.
Yes.
And it sounds like you're saying, in these experiences, part of the goal is to see that other one doesn't have to be scary, doesn't have to be wrong, doesn't have to be different from you, and to kind of use that as like an integration point.
Yes. Beautifully said. Beautifully. There, you know, and it's one thing to intellectualize it, because they teach that in school and university, and we see it all the time in social media, as well as the opposite. But when you experience it, when you face your own fears and find out these people that you labeled as other are actually the miracles, if we use that term, that bless you and support you and strengthen you, you realize, holy crap. Like, why did I harbor this outdated thought about who the other is? And it's only then, I think, that you finally come face to face and decide to leave it in the gutter.
Yeah. And that's, you know, in a weird way, it kind of feels like exposure therapy. That's it.
Yeah. Another term that I love is intentional disruption.
Ooh, say more on that.
You know, also in analyzing adventure, there are five different kinds of adventures, and each one graduates to a different level of disruption. And the first one is we live vicariously. We live through movies. We live through TV. We live through our kids. So there's vicarious adventure. There's pseudo adventure, which is something similar where we are living it in a way. Like, I should change that around. A vicarious adventure is I'm living through somebody else. My football team, my kids, I'm living through them. Pseudo adventure is you're kind of involved in the adventure. Like when you are immersed in a book, your mind starts going in 3D time. So there's that, those two. And then you have thrills, you know, bungee jumping, racing, where you're on a bullet bike, seeing if you can defy death. And then there's the fourth one. Now, the fourth one's really interesting because it's imposed adventure. You didn't ask to get cancer, but guess what? You got it. You didn't ask for this divorce, but guess what? It came. You didn't ask for your son to get in a car wreck, but it happened. And that's like where you're at the edge of a knife, and you can either go on one side and get cut and say, shaking your head at God and your fist at God and the universe and saying, why did you do this to me? Mm-hmm. Or you can go on the flip side and elevate it to what I call the fifth one, which is inspired adventure or intentional disruption, where you say, I know it's going to be difficult. I know this pulls me out of my comfort zone, but I actively choose it. And I will act, even if it happened to me, I will act as if I chose it.
That's really powerful and a cool way to break down levels of adventure. I mean, talk about intentional disruption, right? With that first level being vicarious adventure, because so many people, right? For me in this last year, they're like, oh, I lived through your post this last year, mm-hmm. which I'm like, that's excellent. But if it's something in you that's stirring here, like, listen to that. So I think you can say people who are watching you do what you're doing in the world and go through those different levels of adventure mentally and say, like, yeah, I want to do the choosing. I want to feel inspired to take this adventure with those, you know, you talked at the beginning with generative, unpredictable, immersive, daring, and enticing aspects. I mean, I'm all about this. You know that.
I know that.
So what would you say to someone who's curious about adventure, but terrified of it?
I would say you're in the perfect spot. Like, that's where a dream is.
Yeah.
If it doesn't have that clash between being terrifying and exhilarating, then I tell people that's not the dream. It might be a stair step to the dream, but that's not your true dream, because you would have already done it otherwise. And it's in moving toward that fear, toward that terror, that you realize how powerful you are and how the universe has your back. People aren't out to, a lot of times we think that people have a gun in one hand and a knife in the other, and they're out to get you. And when you move toward your dream, and I know things happen, like disasters occur, I'm not ignorant of that. But I've found in the people I talk with and in my personal experience that people have homemade bread in one hand and a glass of lemonade in the other. And they just are so excited that they meet you that they want to support you. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, what you were sharing is having access to that level of kind of confidence where you take that on and succeed is so beautiful. And I'm curious, if you were to look at, you know, it, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to be projecting here, but you choosing to finally see the dream, take the dream and make it happen, right? Commit to that of cycling across the country was the first domino to fall in this sequential series for the rest of your life so far. So I'm curious, before that decision, how much access to your own power do you feel like you had versus where you are today?
Oh, 5%. Like I didn't even realize it, Christina, but I was angry. I felt entitled. I felt trapped. And at the time, I wouldn't have said any of those things about me. Mm. Like none. There was a specific instance I recall. I was near the university and I was cycling in the bike lane, and there was a guy coming the opposite direction. And I flew off the handle. I'm like, what a jackass. This jerk is in my lane going the wrong way, putting both of us in peril. What a... Ugh. And I was quite angry at him, even though I didn't yell, I didn't spout at him, but I felt it.
The internal dialogue.
Oh, yeah. And that same visceral reaction that you talked about, oh, with the dog, I felt that, only it was vehemence. And then I remembered, and I can't remember if it was like Michigan or was Wisconsin or Minnesota, but one of those, same thing happened. Here was a guy on the wrong side of the road, on the side of the road that I was going in the opposite direction. And instead of targeting him as wrong, instead of claiming that this was my part of the road, I just moved over and he passed. And I remember stopping and going, that was so simple. Why didn't I do that before? I don't need to make him an enemy. I can just let him pass.
I love that story because I share with so many people, sometimes the biggest life-altering shifts are in the smallest moments.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. So to see, like, in that one really small moment, and I will literally share with you, this morning, Lane, I was getting ready to go to the gym and I slipped on my shoes, went out the door. And you know, when you slip on your shoe, the very back piece, you mm-hmm. know, it like, it cuts in a little bit and it starts to irritate your heel because you slipped on your shoe instead of untying the laces and putting it on and retying the laces like a real human. And I decided this morning, like, that was a moment where I can now say, from here on out, I'm not going to slip on my shoes because it creates small bits of irritation. I'm going to take an extra minute of my day, untie my shoes. And that felt like a huge awareness for me today. In that microsecond of how I put on my shoes, in the same microsecond of having another biker pass you and a cyclist to say, oh, I just moved over. How simple.
Yes. And what's beautiful about what you just said, Christina, is the connection with story. There's a guy I follow on LinkedIn called Dan Manning, and I just love his work. It's all about story and storytelling, which I studied and pursued for ages. But I forget who he quoted about it, but he said, ultimately, there are three parts of story. There's the before, there's the after, but you can usually pare the middle down to 7 seconds where something shifted. So those micro events. And I love that. That's a beautiful term for it.
Yeah. And for you to have spent years, right, cycling around, understanding the world in a different way, to then better guide, coach, lead, and support the people that go on these adventures with you. Mm-hmm. So that you help them access those micro moments more often.
Oh, right? Yes. Yes. Yeah. In fact, we have an exciting program coming up. It really doesn't matter where we go. Like, it really doesn't. You can go to India or Japan or New Zealand or Czechia, and it's not necessarily the landscape in the country that you go to, but we are going to New Zealand this fall. And I'm really pumped because that was the very first place I took a group ever.
Oh, that must feel pretty full circle coming back. And as we're kind of getting towards the end here, and one, thank you so much for sharing so much of your journey. And nobody who's listening is going to have a journey that looks just like yours, because yours is uniquely yours. But, you know, my hope with this whole podcast is that someone connects with something that's being said and they hear it differently, right? So yes. With that, and you're sharing so freely today, I want to give you the opportunity to share more about this full circle moment of you going back to New Zealand, what that looks like.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It is terrifically exciting. We're going back to primarily the route that we took way back then, only now the program has come light years ahead. And I got to get this out to share a little bit about it. What's really exciting about it is that this adventure reinvents your life. It challenges old ways of being, and it does challenge old ways of doing, but it's deeper. Mm. It's being. Because being one thing, when you are being open, then openness flows naturally out of you. So it challenges old ways of being, so that people can step out of the old limiting stories and experience an actual hero's journey that awakens awe and wonder. And for many people, they return with a focus and a lightness and a joy that influences everyone and everything they touch.
I love that last piece, because so often I think we can get caught up in, you know, who am I to think I can selfishly go take a week in New Zealand? And it's like, this is no longer just about you. It's about you and every other person you encounter from this point forward, right? To have that ripple effect.
Absolutely. Like 128%. And it's funny, because people will self-sabotage because they think, well, I got to take my spouse with me. I got to take my kids with me. And they don't need to go. I just met with a woman who said, I want to go see places and my husband doesn't want to. So I don't go. And actually, can I tell one final?
Please.
Let's see, what would I call this? I would call this a cautionary tale. There was a buddy of mine who was going to go on the first one that I went. The first time I had a client was not New Zealand. It was up in Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Germany, and Netherlands. And this guy who was going to join me was so excited because he'd been a missionary there decades ago. And his wife said, no, you're not going to go unless I go. And I'm not going to go on a bike. So no, you can't go. So he didn't go, but he was so fascinated with the idea of cycle touring that he went out and bought the bike. He was already a cyclist, bought the bike, the gear. He had the wide brim hat that overlaid his helmet. He bought camera gear. He bought maps. And he said, I'm going to go from Mesa up to the Grand Canyon and around, and then through Southern Utah back to my native Colorado. And he lit up. He was so excited. And I said, great. When are you going to do it? Oh, I'm going to do it in the spring. Super. I went and led a trek. I came back. I met with him. I said, how did it go? Oh, well, you know, work got busy. And so I had to postpone it. But I'm going to do it in the fall. Oh, okay, great. Fall came. Hey, you got to be pretty excited about that. You ready? Oh, well, you know, I got a new position at church. And so I decided to forbear, but I'm going to go in the spring. Okay. So spring came. I went on another track, came back, approached him. How did it go? Oh, well, you know, I got a new job and a new position at my work. And so I decided to wait, but I'm going to go in the fall. And I thought, man, what? Of course, fall came, he said the same thing. A month later, we got this email. He was there talking to us at church that morning, Sunday morning, that evening. We got an email that said, we regret to inform you that brother such and such has died. And I thought, he wanted this, I thought, more than anything else in the world. I mean, he had shaped his life around being able to go. And then ultimately he didn't go. And as crushed as I was that my good friend had died, believe it or not, I felt more crushed that he didn't get to live a dream that he'd had. And I think that's for a lot of our listeners, that they have a dream and they allow too many other things to get in the way, the pressures of life. So coming back full circle, you really do commit, and then you figure out how to and just make it happen.
That is such a powerful story. Like, as you were sharing it, I felt deflated, and that wasn't even my experience, right? Of, I think the biggest killer of dreams can be, I don't even want to say realistic responsibility, but perceived responsibility.
Yes.
Right? We have this idea of, well, it actually feels responsible. Like I should stay at home and take care of my family. I should stay in this job that provides, you know, great benefits and a secure salary. Like all those things play in. And if you can question that enough for your own dream, and I'm not saying it's going to change overnight. It can absolutely. But just to question it and like crack that door to what you were saying before of possibility, like, how is it maybe possible that you could make it happen, is so exciting. So for the people that have listened, Lane, and they're like, okay, the door has not been cracked. The door has been ripped off its hinges. I'm like ready to go on a chosen adventure. How can people learn more about you and where you are?
I would love to have conversations with people. They can contact me in one of three ways. One, they can text me directly at 480-208-1460. They can email me at guide@wayofthehero.com, or they can jump on my website, wayofthehero.com, and learn more about the program.
Amazing. It is one of those things where I had, you know, Lane and I have connected a handful of times now, and I've shared, I'm not a huge cyclist. And Lane was like, you don't have to be a huge cyclist. So if people are listening and curious about the adventure side, it doesn't sound like you need to have, you know, a crazy level of, you know, experience cycling, just a desire for adventure.
Exactly. Like, I need to ask, were you this massive hiker before you went on your big journey?
I was a big hiker, yes, but I was not a huge risk taker. So that was what shifted for me personally.
So to that point, yeah, most of the people who join me, they're not cyclists. They're just people who are willing to stretch themselves, who want the challenge. And what's crazy is, just like your epic journey, in the preparation, you level up so that, of course, now it flows naturally out of who you've become. All the and on the journey, the fears that you face, you lay them aside so that now overcoming fear is just, it flows naturally out of who you've become.
Exactly. And for you to share your journey through that, and I've shared bits of my story there, and I continue to have more and more people on to talk about their own unique way of navigating a non-linear life path that looks non-traditional, to encourage more people to listen to that small whisper that's not leaving you alone, of the thing that you want to do, what you want to create, the dream you want to go after. Because we are not saying it's going to feel easy. We are saying it's going to feel terrifying, and you should do it anyway.
Yeah. Otherwise, where in the world do our kids and our family members and friends, where do they get the model of somebody who bucked their fears and faced them and went ahead? I mean, it's really easy to say, oh, yeah, some, you know, Tom Cruise out there, large larger than life, somebody so far removed from us. But really, where do our kids get to see somebody living their dreams right up close and personal, where they can model it, where they can follow that model? That's so in answer to something you said earlier, yeah, the perceived obligation. What is the perceived obligation we have to our dreams? Like, if we're going to be obligated to anything, it should be that, because that reveals our purpose here in the world.
Absolutely. And, you know, to wrap it up, exactly what you're sharing, so often I see people notice the fear and choose not to do anything with it. I think that dangerous level is trying to ignore it when we know it's something that we really want. Mm. And there's not a right or wrong way to do it. I don't think, you know, you have to be this big, bold, audacious risk taker in order to get the most out of life. Because ultimately, if you're happy, great, keep doing what works for you. Mm-hmm. But if you're listening and you're curious of like, I think there might be something else, I think there may be more available to me, you're also probably right. So mm-hmm. being that person to model for other people what it looks like to walk towards fear, what it looks like to make the idea you can do anything you put your mind to a reality, right? Instead of just an idea.
Love that. Yes, absolutely.
So Lane, thank you for spending your time with me today. Thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for sharing your opportunity for people to go cycle New Zealand. And not just cycle New Zealand, but to transform in the process.
Christina, thank you. Thank you for being one of those models that people can follow, and for being a spark that ignites the hero within others. I love that. I love being on the show. Thank you so much for having me. You're wonderful.
Awesome. Thanks, Lane. Keep walking towards fear, everybody.